Welcome to an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma give their opinions on the latest happenings surrounding Yankees baseball, as well as dive into the hottest topics in the sports world. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Off the Wall here on YesNetwork.com. I'm Joe Auriemma. Chris Sheeran couldn't be here today on the Daily Edition, but I'm here with Lou DiPietro of YesNetwork.com. Lou is a guru with the Yankees, with the minor league system, and sports in general. If you haven't been reading his articles, he is the man. How you doing, Lou?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for having me. I hope I can fill Chris's shoes well.
I think you can, and I think we're going to start. Actually, let's start with the New York Knickerbockers, because look, that was a heck of a performance last night. They, right off the bat, had a lot of energy. Carmelo started laying bricks again, but bottom line is when, you know, the Pacers brought it, you know, tight, the Knicks went on a ridiculous run, a 36-4 run, and they won the game 105-79, and really just an impressive fashion.
Yeah, they came out and did exactly what they needed to do yesterday. They needed to win that game first and foremost, but they needed to, I think, prove to themselves that they had it in them to take over, so to speak, and they did with that large run in the third and fourth quarters. You know, it got a little out of hand at the end there for Indiana, but on the whole, the Knicks did what they needed to do. Okay, they split at home. You know, you want to take care of your business at home. Now they go to Indiana for the next couple games, and we'll see what they can do on the road, but that was a huge step. J.R. Smith didn't have a great game, but he was better in that game than he had been in the previous few, which is a step forward. I mean, he's a sixth man of the year. He's going to need to step up. You know, if Carmelo, like you said, lays some bricks again, he's going to need to step up and be that guy to carry a little bit of the scoring load. And now also, as you look forward, Amari Stoudemire may be back for game three, game four at the least. Who knows what that's going to do to the offense? It will give them a whole different dimension, especially if he comes in with the second unit like he had
coming off the bench, right?
But, you know, if he's ineffective as well, that also means they've got to lean on guys a little more because, you know, Amari is going to get the ball when he's in there. He's going to try to get right back into the offense. He is a superstar after all. So we'll see. We'll see how the dynamic changes in game three and or game four, depending on how much and when he plays. But like I said, yesterday was a big step forward for them. They showed they can take over and they won going away.
They won a game they needed to win, and now looking at it, it's a best of five. Look, they lost the home court, but if they steal one in Indiana, then, you know, again, we're right back to where they need to be with, you know, having home court. And, again, you have to love the play of Kenyon Martin last night, aggressive. You have to love Felton came back a little bit. Shumpert had a good game. That dunk was absolutely ridiculous, and it kind of energized the crowd to a whole other level. They fed off of the crowd. It was a desperate situation. Desperate times called for desperate measures, and they won a game they needed to win. And now, again, we're back in a situation where it's a series. It, you know, as good as the Pacers looked in Game 1, the Knicks were back to where they needed to be in Game 2. And made a statement. If you ask me, I think they made a statement in that game that, you know, we're not going anywhere, and this is going to be a long, long series.
Well, absolutely. When you look at, you know, any 2-3 matchup in the playoffs, it's going to be a dogfight for the sole fact that those are two teams that, I know the NBA rules seedings are a little different now with, you know, if a team is in the top four, they can be ahead of a division winner, but that's going to be 90 to 95% of the time. The 2-3 matchup is going to be two teams that won their division.
Right.
And, you know, the Knicks, the Atlantic division was a lot tougher than everyone gave it credit for this year. You know, you had the Nets who were kind of up and down a lot at times. The Celtics fought through everything to win, you know, 40-some games and make it into the playoffs as the 7th seed. That was a tough division. The Knicks won 54 games, but they didn't do it easily.
Right.
You know,
right.
And the same with the Pacers. I mean, Chicago was missing guys all year. Derrick Rose didn't play a minute. Boozer missed time. Noah missed time. Deng missed time. Heinrich missed time. And yet, there they were as the 5 seed. You know, again, a team that won 40-plus games. And, you know, Milwaukee snuck in there in the playoffs at the end.
Even
though
they were
under 500. So they played in two very tough divisions, and they came out on top. And now they're going to be in a dogfight. If this doesn't go seven, I won't say I'll be surprised, but I'll be relieved, I think, for whichever team wins. Because as much as Chicago kind of, you have to say, upset Miami the other night.
Yes, they did.
You know, they showed a graphic on television last night that this was the third time Miami has lost game one in the Big Three era of a series, and both times they went on to win the series 4-1. And with the Bulls banged up, I mean, who knows, that could very easily happen again. So, you know, it's going to come down to a war in the other series to see how much of a challenge Miami gets in the next round, should they do that again.
And it's funny, you brought up the Chicago Bulls, and I just want to kind of touch on their upset victory. But look, I think the Miami Heat were actually upset when they realized that they had to play the Bulls instead of the Nets. I talked to this about subject with Chris yesterday, and I said, look, bottom line is the Nets showed what they were in that game seven. They didn't show a lot of heart in front of their home crowd. And bottom line is the better team, the team with more heart, not with more talent, the team with more heart went on to the next series. And that's the one thing that Miami has to worry about, is that this Chicago Bulls team, there's something about them. You know, with all of the injuries, with everything going on with that team, there is just something about that Chicago Bulls team that they're, you know, they're fighting through everything, and they're giving it their all, and they're really, really, really going to give Miami a hard time. It might be a 4-1. Who knows? But they're going to give Miami the hardest time getting to this Eastern Conference Finals. And I'm telling you, Miami, when they saw that the Nets lost and it was going to have to be the Bulls, they sweat a little bit. I'm telling you.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, looking back, the average margin of victory, Miami beat the Nets three times this year. I think the average margin of victory was somewhere in the 20s. So it really wasn't competitive in any one of those games. You know, they didn't fare as well against the Bulls, if you can say they didn't fare as well. I'm going to give Tom Thibodeau a piece of praise that people might think I'm crazy for.
Mm-hmm.
But he is very Belichickian, if that's a word, in that his system, I mean, he spent years as an assistant. He was with the Knicks, the Celtics.
Yeah, he's just been all over the NBA.
He's been all over the NBA. He spent years as an assistant. He's honed his craft. He's a very good coach in that he has a system of play. The Bulls roster fits very well into that system, and when Derrick Rose is healthy, he's one of the best players in the NBA, so he could fit into any system. But his system works because he finds guys to fill roles when others are out. Jimmy Butler has played every minute of the last, I think, three games.
Yes, he has.
And, you know, Jimmy Butler, if you remember him from college, was a great player. He was part of a very good team. You know,
but he's
kind of been an NBA role player, for lack of a better way to put it. And now he's stepping up, playing 48 minutes a game, performing, shooting, doing everything. Tom Thibodeau gets the most out of whatever he has, much like, you know, Bill Belichick has with the Patriots. Yes, they have Tom Brady, and yes, they've had a lot of talented players, but, you know, they've also had the Julian Edelmans of the world. And he also goes out and finds guys like Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez who, you know,
diamonds in the rough that can play in his system.
Right. I mean, you know, Rob Gronkowski was a good tight end in college, but he played in an unheralded program. Aaron Hernandez played in a marquee program, and, you know, a lot of people thought, oh, he's kind of a spread offense guy. He's a Florida product. And Belichick puts him in, plugs him in, and plays to their strengths.
And don't forget, Wes Welker was a good receiver and a good specialist when he was in San Diego, and then he became an all-world
receiver.
He's
a multiple-time Pro Bowler, exactly. So Thibodeau does the same thing. I mean, you know, they're missing Heinrich, they're missing Dang, you know, they've missed Boozer. Obviously, Rose has been out all season. You know, he's getting maximum production out of guys like Jimmy Butler, out of Nazi Muhammad, out of, you know, Marcus Teague hasn't really played a lot, but when he has, he's stepped up to that level and given them everything he has.
Right.
It's working, and yes, like you said, this could be a five-game series, but you can be absolutely sure that if it is, the Bulls will make these next four games the hardest four games Miami might play in the postseason.
Yeah, and, you know, it could be a situation where if the Knicks and Pacers do go seven, the Heat could be just as worn out in five games as the Pacers and Knicks, whoever advances into the next round. I mean, that's really what it could come down to.
Exactly.
All right. Now we're going to transition to a little bit of baseball. Yankees lose 2-0 in the opener against Colorado. Another tremendous performance out of Hiroki Kuroda. Jorge De La Rosa, not a great performance, but enough where basically he didn't, you know, his pitch count was high by the sixth inning. They had to pull him, but he wasn't awful, and he basically limited the Yankees to nothing. They had four singles on the night, and Carlos Gonzalez does what he does, hits the game-winning home run against Kuroda. The one mistake pitch Kuroda threw all night, two-run home run, and basically that was it. The final score was 2-0. And in what we thought could be a very high-scoring series, because both the Rockies have been hitting very, very well, and the Yankees, coming from the American League, going into Colorado, we thought this could be a very high-scoring series. Game one is a 2-0 affair.
You know, it's funny when you preface it that way, that it was a 2-0 affair, but if you look at the way both pitchers pitched last night, De La Rosa wasn't dominant, but he got pitches where he needed them, and as you said, the Yankees had four singles. Now, granted, this is going to be a semi-cheap plug, but as I wrote yesterday in a series preview, you know, Ben Francisco played last night because two lefties are coming in this series. They face De La Rosa, and then Jeff Francis is supposed to face Sabathia on Thursday. So Girardi's going to try to get his right-handed lineup in there a little bit. So, you know, he played last night, and then Brett Gardner came in and pinch hit for him, I believe it was the fifth or sixth inning. You know, that changes the lineup dynamic a little bit, because now you got a guy like Gardner hitting in a five or a six spot where he's a little different of a player. You know, it's nice to have him on base ahead of the Overbays of the world, but it also changes his dynamic where he comes in the lineup.
Right.
You know, they didn't perform offensively, but right now, with the roster the way it is, and Nunez, I guess, still day-to-day with his rib cage injury, you know, Girardi's going to have to piece it together, and I'll tell you what, if David Phelps and or CeCe Sabathia can pitch the way Hiroki Kuroda did last night, you know, they're going to have a good chance to still win 2 out of 3. I mean, what Kuroda did last night, even in a loss, he made one mistake to Carlos Gonzalez, which Carlos Gonzalez is one of those players that if you make one mistake to him, he's going to make you pay.
Right.
What he did last night in pitching seven innings and going that deep, you know, he wasn't terrible in the lineup. He kind of, you know, there was that play where Chris Stewart ended up stealing second base on the bunt and run, and he, you know, moved him over. But what he did in just even saving the bullpen, too, especially with a guy like Phelps, who's never pitched in Colorado, he's making his second start of the season. Who knows, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, who knows what you're going to get out of him tonight, because he's only made one start. He's built up, but he's never pitched there. He's got all this that could go against him. Kuroda saved the bullpen a lot. Sean Kelly pitched well in the eighth inning. But Kuroda, just that performance, I mean, that's what you've come to expect out of Hiroki Kuroda so far.
We've said it time and time again. I said it on this podcast. Hiroki Kuroda is the most underrated pitcher, starting pitcher, in the American League, if not all of baseball. And the reason is because he's got CeCe Sabathia in front of him, who takes a lot of the, you know, acclaim. He's the ace of the staff. I made an argument in one of my articles saying that the Yankees don't have one ace. They have two aces on this staff. Last year, Hiroki Kuroda, for a very good chunk of the season, was the best starting pitcher the Yankees had, especially when Sabathia was hurt and when Sabathia was struggling throughout the season, because he struggled last year. But look, Hiroki Kuroda, time and time again, does what he does. When he doesn't have his best stuff, he battles through. Last night, he had good stuff. He just made one mistake, and that's it. And look, the Yankees' offense didn't come to play. He didn't get the run support. He got a loss where he only gave up the two runs, but he did save the bullpen, like you said. And now he basically hands the ball off to David Phelps, who's got a chip on his shoulder and something to prove.
Yes.
He knew that in the last start, that was his chance to kind of dethrone Ivan Nova from this starting rotation. This was an opportunity for David Phelps to come in and say, look, I know Nova's been throwing well, but I'm here too, and I think I could be in this rotation. And he pitched well in every inning but the fourth inning, where he gave up that four spot. Yeah. And to me, this performance on this night is a huge, huge outing, because I think he's coming in with a chip on his shoulder.
Absolutely. And like you said, you know, the fourth inning got away from him his last time out. You know, he hit a couple of batters. He even said, he's like, you know, my loss of control or whatever I did doesn't make me leave a pitch up in the zone that gets hit out, you know,
right.
for a big hit. The thing with Phelps is he knows he has that opportunity and he wants that opportunity. And now Ivan Nova is scheduled to pitch two innings in extended spring training at some point today. There's already been talk that with Monday's doubleheader in Cleveland, they're allowed to add the 26th man. If Nova's ready, he's eligible to come off the DL on Sunday. That'll be 15 days. The Yankees would have to be creative about it. They would have to technically, I think, option someone to the minors and then bring them right back up as a 26th man because that person has to go to the minors right away. So they can't just say, okay, we're going to add Nova and then send, you know, Nuno or Claiborne down. That
right.
The person they add as number 26 has to go. So they'd have to be creative. But he could come back and pitch one of those games in that doubleheader in Cleveland. And looking, you know, ahead as the schedule goes, Monday is 5 days from today.
Right.
So it's going to be Nova and Phelps
if that's the case. It's his spot, right.
That could be the ultimate, like, they're going to pitch against the same team in the same day. That could be the ultimate
battle royale.
Exactly.
So whoever pitches better tonight gets the rotation spot.
In a world where two men are fighting for one spot, the Cleveland Indians stand in their way.
It's true, though. I mean, look, he's got a lot to prove. I honestly feel like Phelps knows that this is his shot. And I think the Yankees are going to get a good performance out of him. I really do. I think that he's going to go out there. He's going to pitch well. I think the offense is going to be a lot better than it was last night.
Yes.
And one thing that, you know, we always talk about, like you said, Kuroda had some decent at-bats in his portion of the lineup. But, look, they with him being so depleted injury-wise on the roster, and now Nunez gone, not having the DH, especially with this roster, mm-hmm. you know, it's a luxury when you have everybody there.
Right.
When you have the Mark Teixeiras and Granderson, and you have, you know, Cano and Jeter and A-Rod, and Euclid, you know, when he's there, and it's a luxury to have those guys to say, who's going to be sitting on the bench tonight? But when you don't have anybody,
right.
it really does hurt the team when you're taking that extra hitter that, even though they might not put up the monster numbers on a day-to-day basis, you know, it does hurt a lineup that's already depleted to
right.
not have that extra professional hitter in the lineup.
Right, and, you know, Nunez being day-to-day, that shortens the lineup in two ways because, A, now you've got Jason Nix playing shortstop, which means he's kind of been the utility guy all year. He can't do that.
Right.
He can't go to left field if something happens. He can't go to first base if something happens to overbase. He's, for lack of a better way to put it, stuck there because Chris Nelson only has, I think, like 30 innings of professional major league experience at shortstop, and he's their de facto backup shortstop right now. They are on their third string left side of the infield, if you want to look at it that way. I mean, Jeter and A-Rod are Jeter and A-Rod. And then it was Nunez and Euclid to begin the year, and now it's Chris Nelson and Jason Nix, and they're doing the job, but there is a huge drop-off in production, in defense, I mean, just because of who they are, from Jeter and A-Rod to even Nunez and Euclid to now Nix and Nelson. And as you said, the Hafner situation, I mean, he's not going to play the field. We know this. So that relegates him to three at-bats. I mean, he might get four if he hits and the Yankees bat around, you know?
Right.
But that hurts. And it also, you know, with the shorter bench, if he comes in and then, you know, they go to a lefty, now he's got a bat against a lefty because you're not going to pinch it for him. You don't have anybody else on the bench you can pinch it for him.
Absolutely. And don't forget, you know, Travis Hafner with his 18 RBIs is a second on the team and runs batted in. And you're essentially taking that bat out of the lineup. And it's, you know, again, he's been one of the guys that, you know, they've been penciling in the middle of the order. You know, they've been doing, you know, Hafner batting fourth, Hafner batting fifth. And you lose that bat, it does hurt. It really does hurt this very, very thin lineup. But like you said, they're doing the job.
Right.
It's just going to be interesting to see how they continue to play through the rest of this three-game set. And, you know, with the starting pitching, you know, like you said, they have Phelps and Sabathia going tonight and tomorrow night. Look, it's not going to be one of those rocky series that we saw a couple of years back when the Yankees went in there and they scored, you know, a million runs. We're yeah. probably going to see the games that you've been seeing. The Yankees are winning games, and that's why Mariano Rivera has been in a million games this year, and he has all these save opportunities. The Yankees are winning games, you know, 3-2, 4-3, and right. that's probably what we're going to see. So just be prepared when you're watching these games that – you're going to see a dogfight.
That's, you know, you mentioned that. That's one thing I think has helped Mariano Rivera maintain his status as the greatest closer of all time over the years is the Yankees do and have won a lot of games by big margins. So, you know, he's made 65, 70 appearances a few times, but this year he's really earning his paycheck coming into just about every game. And the other thing you have to realize about Colorado and, you know, you and I spoke to Dante Bichette Sr. A week or so ago when we were in Lakewood, and he said this, you know, he's like, something's working because we're in first place.
Right.
This isn't a Colorado team that's going to go 60 and 102. This is a Colorado team that's right now has a better record than the Yankees, and the Yankees are 18-13,
mm-hmm.
and Colorado is better. I mean, they're not, by any stretch of imagination, a slouch. You may not know a lot about them. They may not have a lot of sexy names outside of Tulo and Cargo.
Well, you don't know anything about them.
But because, they're a good team.
Because they're playing in Colorado, and they weren't expected to do anything. That's exactly – Bichette hit it right on the head when he told us. You know, you might not know because we're engulfed in not just Yankees right now, but as a New York fan, we're engulfed in basketball playoffs, hockey playoffs – the Yankees. We got a lot going on here.
And Matt Harvey. Let's touch on that, too.
Okay, so we're also engulfed
Matt Harvey mania.
In Matt Harvey mania, who almost, we'll get to that in a second, but this guy basically almost threw a perfect game and got a no decision. But, look, we're engulfed in a lot of different things. We're not seeing, we're not totally engrossed in the baseball landscape so far this season, and look, you're gonna once that happens, you're gonna see that the Colorado Rockies, like you said, are no slouch. This is a good team. It's a very good team.
And you know, so are the Yankees. And I'll tell you right now, if the Yankees continue on this pace and they win, you know, 85 to 90 games this year, Joe Girardi's got to get a lot of votes for Manager of the Year because what he's doing with a roster that's in flux every day, missing, you know, there's two of them are Pineda and Cesar Cabral, but there's 10 guys on the 40-man roster, or that would be or should be on the 40-man roster, that are on the disabled list at this point.
Right now, Joe Girardi, to me, is the manager of the year. You know, going forward, if the Yankees do wind up even snagging, you know, a wild card spot, or if they wind up coming back and you know, winning the division, you know, if they overtake the Red Sox and kind of run away with it when the rest of the guys come back, look, this was the time, we talked about it, this was the time for these other teams to step up and really bury the Yankees. They had a chance, an opportunity to put the Yankees away and basically say, even with your guys coming back, you can't catch us. But the Yankees have done it with good pitching, great pitching, and great starting pitching, good bullpen, and a timely hitting. And Joe Girardi, every move that he's basically made, for the most part, has worked. And like you said, he's going to garner a lot of votes.
And as of, you know, 10:30 last night or whenever that Red Sox game went final, the Yankees had a chance on, you know, May 7th to have a share of first place.
Right.
With the way, I mean, and it's going to be a dogfight between Girardi and John Farrell. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done a great job, too.
Absolutely.
So they had a chance to be, you know, in first place and take a share of first place last night and obviously still do tonight, you know, should the Red Sox lose again and the Yankees pick up a victory. They're doing it. They're getting it done. Vernon Wells has said it every time we've spoken to him in the locker room. He's like, you just can't make excuses. You got to find a way to get it done. And they're 18-13, so that's getting it done, you know?
Yeah, you know, now, look, we talked a lot of Yankees baseball here. I do want to touch on this Matt Harvey situation.
Unbelievable.
Matt Harvey, okay, is the first pitcher in Major League Baseball in the modern ball era, so since 1900, to go 9 innings, give up just one hit, strike out 12, and walk nobody, and get a no decision.
And that hit wasn't like, It wasn't a cut and dried hit, and it wasn't even the Carlos Beltran almost hit in the no hitter last year. That was an infield single where, you know, it was a half of step,
It was really close.
A half a step prevented Matt Harvey from having a no hitter through nine innings.
A perfect game. I mean, a perfect game.
Tejada couldn't have. I don't know if he could have made any better a play on that ball.
I agree. And this guy has just been. He's been amazing. He's got he's 4-0, 1.28 ERA, and 58 strikeouts.
And he could have been 5-0 if the Mets had scored that run in the ninth inning and not the tenth. You know, I mean, it's
unbelievable. He is the shining star on a team that right now is just a sinking ship.
If his next 7 weeks are anywhere close to his first five, and he doesn't throw the first pitch of the All-Star game. Whoever makes that decision should really re-examine their thought process. That's how I'm going to say that. I mean, it's the story. It's the performance. I mean, he's dominating the National League right now. In a league where guys like Steven Strasburg are struggling, he's dominating the league. The All-Star game is in Queens. He's going to drum up a lot of support to start that All-Star game.
Start by start. Seven starts. First start, 7 innings, 1 hit, 2 walks, 10 strikeouts, no runs. Second start, 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts. Third start, 8 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. Fourth start, 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. The next start, 6 innings, 4 hits, 3 runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. The start before this last start, 5 1/3, 7 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts, and then the 9-inning, 1 hit, 12 strikeout performance that we saw last night. This guy, honestly, is right now, like you said, dominating the National League. He could honestly go, you know, when it's all said and done, this poor guy could be like a 12-game winner. He could go 12-4 with all these no decisions or these stupid 1-0 losses. And you know what? It could be a situation where we saw a couple years ago with Felix Hernandez.
Oh yes.
Where
yes.
Felix Hernandez was 13-12 and won the Cy Young because he would deserve it at that point.
I was just going to mention that Felix Hernandez may finally have company and the wins are the least relevant statistic for a starting pitcher of anything. I mean, I'd rather take their, you know, their batting average than their win total at some point in the National League. You know, he's just, for all of the flack Sandy Alderson gets for the fact that the pitching staff is the one area that he has been deficient in developing or adding or whatever.
Right.
I know Harvey was the previous regime. You know, that's an Omar Minaya addition.
Right.
I mean, you couldn't have asked for anything better with seeing Johan Santana out for probably the year. You couldn't have asked for anyone better to step up. And now it's like, this guy is going to be their number one. And if Zach Wheeler comes up at some point and can be the number two, everyone thinks he can be. I mean,
That was a Sandy move. That was in the Beltran trade.
That was, yes.
That was a Sandy move. So, look, he isn't pitching great in Las Vegas. Everybody's talking about the ballpark isn't conducive. I say, look, if you're a great pitcher, you can pitch in any ballpark. But, again, he's young. Well, let him come up. He's going to pitch in the cavernous Citi Field, which could very well help him out. And in the National League, there are a lot of huge ballparks, especially out west, which really could help him. And, look, the Mets, looking at the starting rotation with Harvey and, you know, Wheeler, like you said, possibly being a number two, and Nice, who started the year as their number one, but it has quickly descended to number two. And when these two guys come up,
not his fault either.
Right, and when these two guys, you know, eventually make their way up, could be the best number three in the National League. Their top three is something that the Mets won't have to worry about for the next decade.
Yep.
What it's going to be is Sandy has to put a team around those starting pitching, rotation, because, you know, again, the problems with Ike Davis not starting the season the way he needed to start the season, David Wright being, you know, the lone offensive shining star, Tejada with his error troubles to start this season, but he's getting better. But they're just an atrocious outfield. Sandy's, that's one area that, you know, if the Mets want to compete with the Braves of the world, that's what they're going to have to do.
You know, they've got, you know, Travis d'Arnaud. I know he's hurt now, but he's down there in Las Vegas too, and he's eventually going to be a player.
And what's funny is, hit the, you know, John Buck, the guy who's, yeah, who's playing, he's the best guy on the team. He's he's the best offensive option on the team. The guy's got multiple home runs. Look, when he comes up, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. But Buck,
yeah, see,
Buck is playing a tremendous, and he's catching the pitching staff very well.
Very well. Well, he's a veteran catcher, and he knows what to do. You know, just like Joe Girardi said about Chris Stewart, he's a veteran. He knows what he's doing back there. But, you know, the worst-case scenario for the Mets, it's their Mets' luck. If d'Arnaud was tearing up Las Vegas and he decided to come up, you know, they decided to bring him up, they had a very valuable trade piece in John Buck. And now that's kind of, you know, not out the window, but that's kind of on the back burner. But they have the pieces. They have d'Arnaud. They have, you know, Ike Davis, he still hit 30 home runs last year, even though he started off terribly and he didn't do so well at the beginning of this year. Wright is the franchise. They've just got to put a few more, you know, get a couple of outfield bats. And, you know, they've got a guy in Daniel Murphy who may not be the sexiest name in the world, and he might not be a all-star franchise player, but he's kind of one of those guys you need. He'll play three or four positions if absolutely necessary. He's settled in at second, but he's a 300 hitter.
Right.
And so far through this point, he does a lot of those things that you need guys to do, and they have the pieces. It's just now a matter of developing around them.
Right, exactly. And look, the Mets are going to go through some, you know, a long year this year and possibly next year. But again, you look at those starters, and Met fans have to be thrilled with the future of the franchise. I know New York is a
win-now town.
I mean, we all know that. And we know that the Mets and their fans are looking over at the Yankees and saying, again with this team, again. Look, they have everybody out, and they're still competing, and they're winning on a nightly basis. But when push comes to shove, you know, the Yankees went out and they got veteran guys.
Yep.
You're trying to do it with, you know,
Colin Cowgills and Marlon Byrds of the world.
Exactly. And the Yankees went out and got guys who at one time were superstars. You know, Vernon Wells.
Right.
Was a superstar. Travis Hafner was a superstar. Lyle Overbay wasn't a superstar, but he was a heck of a first baseman in his prime.
And he had a lot of, I mean, his
just home 2 years total, ago, he was a 20 home run hitter.
His home run totals weren't huge, but he's also a good doubles hitter. He's a good extra base hitter. And Brandon Bosch, too. Brandon Bosch had a couple of good seasons in Detroit. I know he fell out of favor at the end of last year.
Overbay is a very, very poor man's. Look, John Olerud is John Olerud. But he's a poor man's John Olerud. I mean, that's what he is. He's not going to give you a ton of pop. He's going to give you some timely hits. John Olerud's average was always good. John Olerud was a professional hitter. Let's bottom line.
Yeah.
But he was also a good defensive first baseman. Overbay is, like I said, he's a poor man's John Olerud.
And what you have to look at with Overbay, too, is, you know, prior to the last week of spring training, it was very likely and looking almost certain that Juan Rivera was going to be the first baseman on this team.
Yeah.
Now, Juan Rivera has been a very good to pretty good hitter his entire career. First base is not his natural position. He played a lot there with the Dodgers. Defensively, there's no way he would be as strong as Overbay. Offensively, whatever you got out of him, you got out of him. So, I mean, these are the things. A lot of people give Brian Cashman a lot of heat for, you know, why didn't they do this, or this offseason was, you know, bad or whatever. But he went out, like you said, he not only got a player who was, you know, an all-star in Vernon Wells. He got him on the cheap. You know, the Angels picked up a lot of that contract. And now he's, you know, Vernon has a chip on his shoulder. He's performing. He wants to show the world he's not as bad, for lack of a better way to put it, as he has shown the last couple of years. You get a guy in Overbay who knows at this point in his career that he knows he's a stopgap. You know, I'm sure he knows he's a stopgap, but he's performing. He's doing his job. He's doing it well. He's giving this team offense. He's playing more now against left-handers because of Euclid's injury, which he's not as strong against, which, you know, will hurt his overall numbers eventually, but he's doing the job he was brought in here for, and he's doing it well.
I actually, and I brought this point up to Chris the other day, I said Lyle Overbay was everybody basically was saying when Mark Teixeira came back, Overbay was going to be cut from this team.
Right.
He was going to be the guy to go. He's making a very good case for himself, mm-hmm. very good case for himself to remain on this team.
And a lot of that, too, I mean, Teixeira, it's when you look at his injury, when it comes to swinging a bat with a right wrist injury.
They need him as insurance
you're
at this
right,
point,
you're
you
right,
gotta think,
with
right?
With a right wrist injury, which is what Teixeira has.
Right.
That is your pull hand, I guess, for lack of a better word. When you're swinging from the left side, that's your bottom hand. That's the
right.
hand that takes, you know, if you release or takes the brunt of that.
So, and most of the time he's hitting left-handed
right.
because there's more right-handed
pitchers.
Right.
So that may come a little slower because that wrist is compromised. Overbay is a left-handed hitter.
Right. And
you know what I mean? I mean, there could be opportunity there for him.
Like I said, I do not think Lyle Overbay is going to be the casualty when Mark Teixeira does make his way back. I think they need him. I think they need him as insurance.
Yeah.
I think they need him in case Teixeira isn't fully back, if the wrist isn't right. They don't want a chance losing Lyle Overbay.
And with Euclid's back, too, that's your backup first baseman, for lack of a better you know, way to put it. That's your backup first baseman that might also be compromised.
Right. Well, Lou, look, it's going to be an interesting series in Colorado. A lot of good baseball, a lot of good hockey. We didn't even get into that, but we're not going to get into that today.
The Icelanders.
The Icelanders with a huge, huge win. Let me put it to you this way. Goaltending is a non-factor in that series.
Let me put it this way. For the Mets fans that you just said the future, you know, it's the future of the franchise they should look forward to, just look about 20 miles east, and there you go. The Islanders, for years, have been that, you know, the future, and yeah, they were the 8th seed, but they're tied 2-2 with the mighty Penguins.
The future is present right now.
Yeah.
And I know we said we weren't going to get into this, but I said, look, the Barclays Center, I think, is getting a coup, because when the Islanders do make their way over to the Barclays Center, they could very well be the premier team of this area, you know, because who knows what's going to happen with the Rangers. The Devils, obviously, getting old. The Islanders, they have a shot here. And I'm a Devils fan. You know that. The Islanders have a shot here, and they have a shot to win this series.
Yeah.
And like I said, not because of goaltending on both sides. So, look, a lot of stuff going on in New York right now. But you got to keep it here on Yes. I know there's, you know, Knicks playoffs and the Islanders and the Rangers, but you got to keep it here on Yes for the Yankees.
I heartily endorse this product and or service.
Okay, well, on that note, keep coming back to Yes for, you know, all of your Yankees and everything else. Nets off-season needs. I know we were going to talk about head coaches, but, you know, look, we talked a lot today about the Yankees. We talked a lot about the Knicks. So we're just going to move on, and we'll talk about the Nets coaching search in the near future. We know Phil Jackson will not be manning the bench for the Brooklyn Nets. I almost said New Jersey. But, Lou, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. You know, it's wonderful.
All right. For Lou DiPietro, I'm Joe Wariema saying we'll see you next time on Off the Wall. And next time is tomorrow.
The Off the Wall podcast comes to you each week on iTunes and YesNetwork.com. If you like what you're listening to, simply subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you have an extra minute, leave a comment and rating.